Okay, Fiona?
Thank you, Fiona Harvey from the Financial Times. Thanks. Just a practical point to begin with, Martin, if you don't mind. Just this slide you've got up here, is it possible just to, for the absolute avoidance of any doubt, I know you've taken us through some of this, but have you got anything where you point out, you go through line by line these 10 comments and these 10 errors?
Yeah. I tell you what I can give you, Fiona, is anticipating that sort of request, what I call boringly an itemized rebuttal, that when you get the full report, download it, and I can copy this to you when I've finished here. It's basically we go through, I don't know how many points, 25 points, and we say which one we accept and which one we don't. So that's just a summary. Yeah, and anyone who wants that, we can click
that. We'll email it to all of you. Email. I just thought it was 15 pages. I thought not too much.
And it says why, and it runs to about 15 pages. Yeah.
Yes, it's not off the record. It's very much on the record.
Sure. Yeah.
Whether any of your readers or not.
No, it's on there.
But as always, the devil is in the detail.
Indeed.
That would be extremely useful.
Sure.
Just the question I wanted to ask then is about the reaction to this from poets and skeptics. In two parts, basically. First of all, poets and skeptics are going to look at this and they're going to say, great, this damning report by the Dutch government has produced 33 clear errors in this IPCC report, because if you add up, there's some statements, etc. They're going to say, that this is this is terrible. This number of errors makes the IPCC report completely unacceptable. So my first part of the question is, you're talking about 7 errata here, essentially. In the context of such a big report, is that a big number, a small number, a very small number? And the second part of the question is, other parts of the climate change research community will say that the positive parts of this Dutch report are just a whitewash, which is what they've said about every other report we've had into every other bit of climate case so far. So, what would you?
How would I reply to that? Well, I wouldn't expect to change the debate and take a big sigh and think, well, this is yet another step in something that's going to go on and on, I think, for a while. But if I were in reply and defence, I'd say there are, of the errors, in other words, not matters of debate or about transparency or could it have been better, there are 7, there are 2 plus 10. One of the two, and the two only relate to the conclusions, which is what we're talking about. Yeah, and one we don't accept, and the other is a reference we've changed. So, okay, and of these 10, we've changed 7 errata, and 3 are references, 1's a typo, 1's a label on a table. So that's 4. You're left with a statement, a sentence about upwelling in southwest coast of South Africa, and a set of numbers, as I mentioned in the Europe chapter, you'll see what this is. A set of numbers was wrongly transferred, which included, I said, Eastern Europe. It includes a part of the Levant and the Eastern Mediterranean in yield numbers for Europe. So there are a set of numbers that are slightly off because they not just the Mediterranean, it's Mediterranean plus. So. Now, I would say that that's a very small number of near trivial errors in what is about 500 pages of extremely dense, probably 100,000 statements. I would have thought it's pretty good going, actually. But that doesn't mean that they're going to listen to what I said. You said, but it's this criticism is coming from, as you called, characterised them, the skeptics. They will dig up some of that detail anyway. But what was the other side of the coin that you mentioned? Oh yes, if I flag up they've endorsed our conclusions, then now can you please take this as credible? They'll say it's a whitewash. Well, I think actually, as Franz Burkhardt will tell you, because I couldn't understand why our authors were receiving these really quite pestering letters asking this, why are they going into such detail and won't let go and won't take explanation as an answer. And he said precisely that. Martin Hale, new director of PBL, they're under the cosh because they were there in the first place, you know, for reasons I've gone into, and they have to prove themselves. And they and it's quite hard-hitting in some respects. It goes through all the items that it finds, the nine errors and the other statements, and it takes them one by one. And it, I think it does that because it needed to be clear to the Dutch MPs, not just to prove itself, but I think such was the row in the Dutch Parliament that there needed to be something clear and hard-hitting. And that's now a right-wing government, isn't it? I mean, it's going to be quite interesting to see how they take it. So what was a right-wing element then is now a right-wing centre government.
Just to say, it's 1,000 pages.
1,000 pages. So, but it's 500 is the regional chapters.
Okay.
It's
okay.
About half there. Yeah.
Don't want any errors in the number of pages. David.
Yes, David Shopman. You've talked about some of these errors being near trivial, but you've also talked about a battlefield. I mean, those of us in the sort of mainstream media are left to know now that Himalaya Gate has a legacy.
Huge.
And I'd like to just sort of ask you to go through how that could have happened. We're picking up on the question about do you need another layer of review? David, you thought you didn't. But actually, a lot of people must have read the Himalaya paragraph, and not, including yourself, I'm sure, and not
we talked about this.
A series of, was it five mistakes in that one paragraph?
Yeah.
And I raise this because it's obviously got a lasting impact. Policymakers, public opinion, newsrooms. And I don't think you've quite tackled that here.
Well,
so could you go through step by how that could have happened? How many people, because by my count, I think at least six layers of people must have read it.
Or can, at least can I respond to that? You're not answering your question, I'll admit. But let me tell you, because well, just give Martin just a couple of seconds to formulate what he's going to say. But from a lead author in the last reassessment and a coordinating lead author in the next assessment, what I actually take through away from that is actually that I must very rigorously apply the rules of the review. You know, for instance, we must not introduce material late on, even where government review or expert review has asked for additions. The review is there to make sure that there are no mistakes in it. We shouldn't be responding to people by adding new material. And that's one of the checks and balances that I think really would help get the next report right. And now that may actually be counterproductive in some respects because we might not be able to introduce the most up-to-date scientific research if it hasn't been there in the early order drafts of our report, which is a bit of a problem. But we must be very strong in the face of especially government review that says, we want this included.
I think to add
well,
to that...
Well, that's part of it, isn't it?
Yeah.
I mean, it did huge damage, and it will last, and it will take a long time for that wound to heal. And I must say, it absolutely... I mean, if you speak to our fellow authors, I think they were just totally dismayed that something like this could happen. All that the author could apparently respond in that way, but I'm only going by reports of how he responded, you know. But you are specifically, I would have read it. Firstly, the author team of 8 people would have gone through that together, although one might have had responsibility. There would have been at least 10 reviewers of the whole chapter once around, but then the numbers weren't in there in the first assessment, and then the second time around, and then the governments. There was only one reviewer comment on that, and Lal was... someone told me it was Nature, the reported Lal as saying an expert reviewer had picked it up, and Lal decided to keep it in because he thought it was something worth flagging. Is that right? That was overseas.
That was a quote.
That was a quote, yes.
So I'm asking you about the process.
But as I understand it, talking about the process, one government, I picked it up, didn't criticise it, the Japanese government, because I went through the reviewer's comments. One reviewer picked it up and said, this is an important statement. If it's correct, do you want to bring it through to a summary? So none of the reviewers, talking about process here, David, picked that up. Now, I think the Dutch have an important recommendation to make here, which is, as well as shotgunning out chapters for review, where you then, in a sense, leave to the reviewers to comment on whichever part of a chapter interests them, you insist that every part of every chapter is covered, even to the extent of maybe paying, as some journals do, pay a small number of reviewers to go through every part of it very, very carefully. And, you know, that I think is useful, because with a shotgun approach, even though you multiply the numbers a lot, you can still get areas in a chapter that aren't being looked at carefully.
This doesn't quite do it, if I may come back, because the 2035 infamous date isn't in the summary for policymakers, as I understand.
No.
Right, so whoever wrote the summary for policymakers section on that bit, Himalayan section, must have read the main body of the text, decided that that date wasn't credible, and then for some reason didn't flag that up to you, or you didn't spot it. I still don't get
it wouldn't have worked that way. The way it works, it is, as the Dutch call it, a pyramid. The authors summarise what they consider to be the most important findings at the front of their chapter, executive summary, and then the same author team boils that down to contribute to a technical summary, and then from that it channels this way, and it dropped out at the beginning here. It wasn't taken forward because the authors themselves, even though that Japan comment was there, if it's important it ought to be taken forward, they presumably decided not to take it forward and they left it there. Which at least that is to their, you know, to their credit.
Well, except that, as you said, the damage is so lasting.
The damage is, why is the damage lasting? Because there was an unfortunate response by the chairman of the IPCC to an Indian government official that became a sort of side story in itself. And then there was the author himself, Lal, who was reported to have said, there was an expert reviewer said queried it, but I decided to keep it in because it seemed to be something worth, what was his phrase? Worth highlighting, even though it wasn't secure. I don't know what he said, David, but I think he was responded poorly or was unfairly reported there, because I can't see any reviewer, I can't see any expert reviewer actually saying that. So whoever phoned him up to say, can I have a comment? Do you know what I mean?
We're going to have to move on. Sorry, that's okay. I've got Juliet, followed by Louise, followed by Richard, followed by Julian. By Ollie. And then
yes, I'm just wondering if it was worth rethinking the demands of governments to summarise as much as you do, and you were all clearly a bit uncomfortable, my senses, with the amount of...
It was the hardest part.
And you say you signed up to it in the past, and fair enough, so you've had to do it. And I'm wondering if it's worth questioning for AL5 whether, in fact, one summarises, 700 pages into your one page of A4.
Somebody will do it.
Sorry?
Somebody will do it. Whether it's, if it's the journalist.
It
if you're presenting.
Yeah. Sure.
Yeah. It's, I don't know. I think the government's. Specify what they want very clearly, and that is what they want, and that's what we must provide.
But there's no point in saying to the government, well, actually, this is an unreasonable demand, and we can do it in two or four times what we're asking for in terms of space. We will summarise, but to summarise that much, it takes away the power of what we're saying, because it takes away, it will be the thing that most people end up reading rather than. We as scientists feel too uncomfortable to accept that.
I think those statements are made prior to the assessments being cast in stone, our task being cast in stone, they're made at the plenary discussions by the IPCC Bureau and those discussions. I guess I'm not party to those discussions, I don't think even Martin is.
Do any of you know that any scientists have made these points of plenary sessions and said to the government, you know, if you're around
that,
we shouldn't be asked to do it?
Yes, several scientists have said that. Mike Hume says that. And I think this will be part of the IAC review, won't it?
Yes.
I think it's one of them.
I think there's a difference here between the... I mean, I felt I had good control over this, the BRIC, because that was our responsibility. But then when our information is taken to this, into the synthesis report, it's a slightly different process, because you've got up three other working groups. And... to my mind, it's you know, as long as one internalises the, as long as you've got processes that control it. I'm not saying this wasn't controlled. It's just that this is a source of some of the, because the Dutch take this as their starting point. They could have taken that, but they happen to take this. This is where their comments, you know, come from, because a line here means about five lines there. Yeah.
Louise?
It was really just sort of a Fiona's question, but I was wondering if the minor accuracy you referred to in the conclusion, is that the African the
water
relation here?
Yeah.
The one that you speak?
Yes. That's right.
And just on the 500 and 1,000 pages, is it 1,000
pages
of the regional chapters?
No. The 1,000 is the whole volume.
Right, okay.
And there are eight regional chapters, so it's a little bit less than half, probably about 450 pages.
They actually
assessed
1,000 page the original document.
It just won't take too long. It's a curious approach they took. You see, they took these 35 statements, which are only examples of 120 conclusions, and then they tunnel back into those parts of the chapter that they think these come from. But as Nigel said, the problem is that the chapters contain a lot of other material over and above what the tunnel just gets to. If you want to know the background to Africa and the population that's expected and how poverty might be erased or not, you've got different trajectories. You've got degradation, what you assume about the degradation trends. And so when you get a Dutch criticism saying, this doesn't say much about all the other factors that multiply stress with climate change, and you think, well, they haven't read the front part of the chapter because they've just tunneled back into the core, which is why I said it's a curious way of doing assessment. So yeah. The whole part of the what we write comes down to the conclusions, and these specifically relate to the nine regional chapters.
Those two conclusions, they only found the one error, which is you contest on that.
Correct.
And then within the regional chapter, as well as the Dutch and the Himalayan glaciers, there's also Anchovy Gate.
No. Not allowed to.
I've said we've corrected that.
Right.
I've said it's the original statement was not a clear impact statement anyway.
Yeah.
Never came out of the chapter, and I think I had a fourth. Comment basically is insignificant.
So it is in there, but you're admitting that it's incorrect.
Yes.
Yeah. And then, but why did they highlight that? And then they talk about sort of other errors that the heat death projected for Australian cities, which are actually attributed to climate, to demographic changes, which seems to me that could be quite important. But why the sort of
I suppose because they, well, you'd have to ask them, but they conclude that it's a sentence that simply needs to come out.
Yeah.
What they call an error, they call it a sharp distortion. It's something they feel ought to be changed.
Right.
Yeah.
Okay.
So here is a sentence that they recommended should be changed. The issue about Australian numbers is a debatable one, where the authors say, well, actually, the chapter makes quite clear the number of deaths from a warmer climate is a combination of more elderly people without air conditioning,
yeah,
under a hot tin roof if they're poor in Australia, and the higher temperatures, all, you know, these three things together. And the PBL people say, well, you ought to have made that clearer. Climate change just doesn't lead to 5,000 more deaths. It's a several things, you know. And that's why we would say, well, yes, but you can't tunnel in like that. You have to, if you read the chapter, you know, it makes it clear.
So they're basically saying there's one significant error in the conclusions which you can test.
Minor.
One minor error in the conclusions, and one minor error in the regional chapters, which you say isn't significant enough.
One minor error in the conclusions we can test, one minor inaccuracy in the references which you've changed. The two top things here.
Right.
Yeah.
What's the error on referencing?
These are in the underlying material in the chapters that don't come through to the conclusions. You with me? They make two sorts of statements. One that touch upon the conclusions, and one which they happen to stumble on when they get into the chapter. And these all are about are in the chapter that they stumble on, and these are about the conclusions.
Can I stop you there? Because we've got three more questions. We've got to finish by 1:30, and some of this will be in the... I mean, you can ask them after, but we'll print off some copies.
The word error, I think, is one that's slightly misleading, because the errors that they're talking about are not things that are scientifically or factually wrong. It's the way they've been expressed, or there are different ways of perhaps presenting that information. It's not like the Himalaya one, which was an error. It was wrong. These ones are not. They are perhaps different ways of interpreting the information that was there, which is valid, but what's there is not wrong. So it's not an error in that sense.
Richard?
I was just going to wonder if there was an objection anywhere about the way that the noises sheep make will change in reference to climate change, and you can call it Five Barred Gate. just a very simple one. Since the first gates suddenly trotted out, all kinds of advice and writing has been going on in scientific journals and so on about how the IPCC should change or what should be different about AR5. And I just wondered if, based on this and based on the ongoing review by the Inter-Academy panel and so on, whether you guys had any sort of short, sharp recommendations that you would make about how the IPCC ought to do things differently.
Well, a couple of things, which are already in train, I think. One is making sure there is more consistency, looking across chapters. And getting more targeted reviews. I think that's really quite an important point. And that's, I think, is in train. And the other thing is to make it clear what the process is for reviewing the IPCC literature. Because if you know, the brick, it's got 1,000 pages, but it doesn't actually have an annex saying, well, what is the IPCC assessment process? How many reviews have gone round and all sorts? And I'd argue that next time round, we need a statement saying, how was this thing produced? Because it's there on the IPCC website, but that's a bit buried. So having more information about process, I think, would be really quite good in a final report.
Any other?
Well, just to go back to, is it Juliet's point before? Sorry, your point before. The system that we have at the moment is that the authors are in control of this, and then it is distilled down to that summary for policymakers, which the governments go through line by line and agree with each statement. And so when you were asking me would I like to see the output be much larger and much more comprehensive, I see a great value in having that document that we know that the governments have been through every statement and agreed every statement. So in a sense, whilst it is always a difficult process to get down to that very fine document, it has a greater value because it has been agreed at that line-by-line statement. So in terms of, I would not be happy if that was the only output from the IPCC, because it would always be fought about over every line. So that was to answer. We know that the fifth assessment report, the next assessment report is going to have much better traceability. We have larger author teams to include much larger amounts of science and from a wider constituency of scientists and nationalities. We have more review editors to oversee the process of review and ensure the traceability. It's going to be much more onerous for us scientists who are involved in it, but again, that's what we've signed up to and that's what we're going to do.
Julian.
Yeah, Julian, I want you just to follow up a little bit on what Fiona was asking about the way the sceptics will look at this. In particular, at the conclusion that the negative impacts dominated at summary level, the sceptics will inevitably seize upon this as proof that you guys have an agenda, that you want to politicise the process. So how would you respond to that? And secondly, do you accept that if or do you accept that conclusion as well? And thirdly, if when it comes to AR5, you guys actually put a more balanced series of summaries in there that contain a bit more about the uncertainties, do you think that will water down the potential impact of AR5?
Well, firstly, I'd say when you read the full report, you'll see quite a good discussion of this issue by the Dutch. I think they're quite fair. And they essentially say, look, we don't disagree with this approach. Actually, it's an approach we would strongly endorse. They call it a risk assessment. We never called it. And by the way, we're undertaking a climate change risk assessment in the UK, adopting exactly the same approach. You know, what are the main risks confronting UK PLC in the future, both the positive and the negative? So I won't go into that because you can read about it, but we had a very, very clearly identified set of criteria, a very clear charge to our authors to identify the main projected impacts, as we call them, because we don't want to identify the insignificant ones. Now, the Dutch would say, okay, I think we did that, and I think it's fair, and I don't think it's improperly weighted to the negative at all. Now, but I think, Julian, you're probably quite right. Those who want to will latch on to this to say that we have emphasised the negative. I very strongly think that they're wrong. Mm-hmm. Now, what the Dutch say is, to counter this, while they would strongly agree with a risk assessment of the kind of say that the UK is just undertaking and will deliver next year, it is useful to portray the whole array of options. In summary, we did it in the chapters, and we did it actually in a set of tables in the technical summary, where they're all mapped out and the uncertainties. We didn't bring them down into the summary for policymakers.
I suppose the fun part of my question really was that if you adopt that approach that the Dutch are recommending, that you bring some of that balanced reporting, if you like, of the risks and the alternatives into the summary, will that inevitably have the effect of undermining any impact of the next report?
No. I don't think it will, because I think what will happen is that this has come in several areas now. Yeah, you're overestimating the bad side, not the good side, and it's set us thinking, well, how do you weight bad and good? It's not an easy question. Often one doesn't offset the other. So I think what we'll do is have a much more nuanced way of thinking about what is, what are the benefits and what are the costs of climate change. And I think there'll be more sort of scientific literature out there which looks explicitly at that and how you do that comparison. And I think if the science hasn't been done yet, but we're certainly thinking about it in the watery area, how best can you characterise it? And I think it might be even clearer about what the relative, more explicit what the relative disadvantages and advantages are. So it could be tighter because it more explicitly looks at the comparison between benefits and costs.
What Nigel says is absolutely right. But the fundamental thing that we can take home from this is there are small benefits to small sectors of communities in certain regional areas from climate change, but the most significant impacts of climate change are not beneficial over the board. And it, you know, I don't think that if you look at the brick, you know, I know from my chapter we highlighted the potential economic benefits of ameliorating climate in Siberia, allowing forestry. We highlighted the benefits of less sea ice in the Arctic and allowing new sea routes. But those are benefits to very small sectors of the community that generally economic benefits rather than the sort of the negative side, which is completely undermining people's lifestyles in those same areas. So it's actually very, very difficult to express unless you're going into, you know, the number of people that are impacted, whether the impacts are, you know, threats to their health and livelihood or small economic benefits. And if we really want to go to that length of trying to attach a number of people who's going to be impacted for every outcome, then we've still got to make this sort of fairly go for the most significant impact.
Yeah, and I think a lot of the adaptation literature now, which is looking at real organisations that are seeking to adapt, they tend to be worried about adapting to bad things, not saying, okay, something good's going to happen, we'll sit back. It tends to be that the adaptation is concerned about adapting to bad, and accepting, you know, any good is a bonus. But you know, there's literature that's emerging on that, which will come out next time round, I think.
Okay, final question, Oliver.
Actually, it follows on from that one again, because I'm still not entirely clear that I understand your position on this. You're saying that you emphasise the important conclusions in some policymakers, important in the context of policy, and you say, and you're quoting the report, autonomous adaptation is what will, sorry, this is Martin, that autonomous adaptation will take care of positive outcomes. So that suggests that you are consciously and in the eyes of the Dutch quite rightly emphasising the negative. You know, you say, you said earlier, that you're not consciously or unconsciously emphasising the negative. And I just don't quite get
it. Okay, you, I think you just use a slight difference, but Oliver has the advantage of somebody because he's got a copy and read it. The Dutch quote me as saying, we looked at the positive and negative. We asked our authors to identify the main projected impacts. That's the word, main. With main being in terms of human livelihood and the environment, the, you know, the exposure fields, judged in terms of magnitude and timing. In other words, were they sooner or later and big or reversible or not? Those three things. And I did offer further to the Dutch that it shouldn't be surprising that, and I didn't use this as a criterion over at all, but I did say to them, they quote me, it shouldn't be surprising that some of the, what to them seem more or less pluses, we didn't list, because the policymakers tend to think that, you know, their challenge is about protection and preserving, and often they will think, and not us actually, but they will think, well, you know, if British agriculture can move north a little bit and they'll switch crops to soya from wheat and things like that, the marketplace can take care of it. But that's not actually a view, no, that's not a criterion that we adopted at all, no. We adopted a question, we asked ourselves what were the main projected impacts for livelihood and environment. Yeah.
We're going to have to finish there. Oliver still looks confused, but he can come and ask me. Our speakers are not here for very much longer, but do run up and ask them any supplementaries. Thank you so much for coming, and thank you for making yourselves available.